now entering a new forum to discuss reality, not illusion. Welcome to UFO Encounters Live with your Watchman of the Night Skies, Ronnie McMullen.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of UFO Encounters Live, and I'm your host, Ronnie McMullen. It has been 10 months since I have done a show. 10 months taking a sabbatical away from the information and the truth, and now I'm back. The people brought me back, the truth brings me back, and must go forward. Tonight, my guest is Thomas Reed. Thomas Reed is an award-winning South Beach fashion photographer and the founder of Miami Models. With clients such as Polo Black, Label, Tommy Hilfiger, Ralph Lauren, he held positions in upper management with companies of Honeywell and Energy. The historic UFO case of the Reed family was assigned valet classification of CE4, Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, with a case category of 3, Physical Evidence. And the case has many layers and is deeply entwined and remains one of the few CE4 cases to be mentioned within the walls of the United Nations. The history involves Marion Burroughs' grandmother, Nancy Reed, mother, and the two brothers, Tom and Matthew. The evidence in this case would include a significant amount of radiation and strong magnetic fields, and is one of a few to have been collected and documented by those in law enforcement. Tonight, again, talking with Thomas Reed about his case and a very interesting twist. Join me. My guest, Thomas Reed. Thomas, welcome to UFO Encounters. How you doing, my friend?
Very good. Thanks, Ronnie, for having me.
You know, it's a pleasure. You are the first guest to come back after a hiatus that I have taken. And, of course, UFO Encounters has been off air for probably about 10 months, 11 months. And coming back and really with a vengeance. And I say that to say the truth must go out. And you have a case here that is surrounded by truth. And it seems like a lot of people want to bury this truth. So I'm going to start off. You've been my guest before. It's been many months ago. But you're a very accomplished photographer, founder of Miami Models, and an accomplished guy, really. And yet, the Reed family has a historic UFO case here, classified as a CE4, Close Encounter of the Fourth Kind, which I'm going to ask you what that exactly means. But and there's some very weird things in your case that are strange, and so I want to talk about that a little bit. First of all, my question to you, Thomas, is the CE4. What the Close Encounter of the Fourth Kind? What, you know, we see the big movie, the Steven Spielberg movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Well, what is the fourth kind?
Well, that's actually that would be a face to face, from what I understand, and the three that follows that, the CE4, or the classification of 3, actually stands for physical evidence.
Okay.
So it's the STAR team has it classified as a 4, basically a face-to-face and physical evidence to go with that.
Now, your case was written about in the Alien Abduction Files with Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner, correct?
Yes, it was.
How has your story been accepted? Are people pretty freaked out by your story, or do they? What do you see with the crowd and how they're dealing with what's happened to you and your family?
I think that anyone who actually sits down and gives it the time to look at the tangibles and the documents, they usually, if they're on the fence about it, that tends to change.
Yeah.
To give you an example, I was in the green room at Fox Studios before we went on their morning show, and they were going to bring us, my brother and I, on, the claims of this and the claims of that, and I laid all the paperwork out, and once they really took a look at it, they actually changed their entire introduction and treated the interview quite differently than they had originally or going to. So I think if you give it time and you look at what we have, I think it's there in black and white for the most part. there's not a whole lot that you can't, with the police reports, it's something, you know, this happened, and, you know, the evidence with the compass spinning and the radiation readings and the witnesses, something happened. And if you're on the fence about it and you look at the information, I don't think that you can deny that something extraordinary happened. And at that point, it's up to you to decide whether or not you want to take the word of the witnesses or not.
Why do you think, Thomas, that the media always has to make fun of these kind of situations? Now, granted, there's been some goofy stories that are, you know, they're trying to get some time in front of the TV. All in all, the ones that are really coming forth to me that I've seen are very real incidents. Why is it the media always has to make a big joke about it and ha-ha, you know, the hee-hee, and you're just a goof? Why do you think they do that?
Well, it's twofold. I think that those who have had something important to say in the past, maybe not only, let's say, them per se, but I think we have a responsibility to bring it to them in a responsible manner. If we use certain terminology, it's going to sound silly. And at the same time, I think that when they remark on it or take a step further and actually comment on it, I think that at that point, you know, if they buy into it, I think, and really believe that there's something there, I do see a little bit of a spin towards the media being a little more acceptive or being able to accept it more. However, in the past, it just looks like they just want to make a joke out of it. And as far as that goes, maybe it was the way it was delivered to them wasn't done in the manner it should have been. Or maybe it's just that, you know, these religious groups too. I mean, if they're church going, maybe they go out of their way to try to bury it for that reason. Perhaps they're warned not to take this too seriously. Maybe,
yeah.
You know, their supervisors or their it's in their little employment manual that to say this or that or abide with this. But you're right. I don't understand why the media has such a tongue-in-cheek more opposed to that meat and potatoes. I mean, this is a very real phenomenon. If you look, I don't go too far with this, but if you look at how our U.S. government classifies religion, it's there as a myth.
Oh, yeah. Even though they created some of it.
It's a myth.
Yeah.
But if you also look into even the older The Sign, you know, way back when, before Project Blue Book, and you look at some of the documentation that my father certainly had when he brought it back from, we got it back from the UN.
Yeah.
It's also, in our government also classifies UFOs or vessels as being very real.
Mm.
So here you are, you've got UFOs, or for lack of a better term, our government recognizes them as being legit, real, solid objects.
Yeah.
And yet, the media has a tongue-in-cheek about it. And then you have religion, which really is a myth, according to our government, and yet they're free to discuss that openly, and that's just accepted in everyday life. So,
do you think
it's almost reversed?
Do you think maybe, Thomas, that the media is fearful? I remember doing an interview in New Mexico on a morning show, and I'd written this book about UFOs, and so I began to talk, and he was very the same way, you know, ha ha ha, fun, let's make it fun. And I just, you know, I laugh with him and I say, yeah, it sounds crazy, but then, you know, you just keep hitting him with truth. And finally he said, you know, we got to go to a break. And he looked over at me and he said, this stuff is real. And I said, yes. And when he came back, everything changed. And so I guess where I'm going here is, do you think that maybe the media does this whole tongue-in-cheek ha-ha-ha thing because actually they're scared to death of what's going on?
Well, I think that the whether they work for Fox or CBS or what have you, I'm sure that there are certain topics they're allowed to talk about and certain ones they're not. As far as the individual who might run your story or take it, say, for a newspaper, I've had some luck with that. I had a very responsible article written by someone at the Sun Sentinel. And actually, I did have some luck with this Fox interview. So I do see it turning a little bit, but as far as, again, who's pulling their strings or why, I think that they're governed, and they're pretty much instructed on how to address certain things. And unless something is undeniable, I think they have to play it off. I think there's I think that's what they're told to do or instructed to do.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, we're going to have to go to a break here, but I want to dive into your case here, because your case is not only just about UFOs, but there's a death in the family that it came very unexpected and very, we'll call it mysterious, and we need to talk about that. And so let's just dive into your case when we get back from the break. You are listening to UFO Encounters Live, and my guest is Thomas Reed. We'll be right back. Hi, Ronnie McMullen here for Life Change Tea. Being the voice for Life Change Tea has been exciting. Hearing the thousands of testimonies over 5 years has been breathtaking. Tears of joy from people feeling better from just drinking this now famous tea. They get new products occasionally, but Life Change Tea by far is their best seller. They receive thank yous and blessings almost every day. Oh yeah, and once in a while, a grump. But they can't help it. They'll just keep putting forth a great product and a positive message. If your health is poor, and you truly are serious about getting better, you need Life Change Tea. Clean water, food, and air has all changed. It's not what it used to be. So order now, 928-308-0408. Call 928-308-0408. Or log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. If you want health, you want Life Change Tea. That's getthetea.com.
Perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. I couldn't help at one point in my discussions privately with General Secretary Gorbachev, I couldn't help but say to him, just think how easy if suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species from another planet outside in the universe.
Says it can breathe. There's gotta be one place left in the world to solitude, distance, and relief. There's gotta be one place left in the world.
Welcome back to the show. You are listening to UFO Encounters Live, and again, my guest is Thomas Reed. Tom, when we get into your case, I guess we should back it all the way back to what in the 50s. When was the first situation of the encounter?
It would be my mother's encounter in Maine in 1954.
Okay, and was she taken? Was she abducted?
Yeah,
I mean, I know these terms are kind of get weird after a while, but did something happen?
Well, something certainly happened, and the term abduction regarding her has been tossed back and forth, because my mother never remembers leaving the room.
Okay.
Although she did have an encounter there. It was a cabin in Moosehead Lake. My grandmother was there, Marion. My Uncle Bob was there, and his girlfriend, Kip. And my mother and Kip were in separate rooms at his cabin that they had for about 5 or 6 days. My Uncle Bob was going to be speaking or meeting with a early college there, and that's why they had gone up. And my mother remembers, going to bed a normal night, and her the next thing she really remembers is that there was like a light maybe coming through a window, maybe it was just in the room itself, kind of like an arching light, and her lower torso was being manipulated left and right. She was grabbing for blankets. She was trying to pull herself away. She was in somewhat of a panic, but she referenced it as being confined to a mannequin, basically, with only able to move her head and hands and so on. And that went on for quite some time, and then it just ended as quickly as it started, and she sat at the end of the bed. She was nauseated. She had gotten up and walked into the kitchen, and my grandmother had just started making pancakes, so it was about 6 a.m., 6:30, and she stood in the doorway, and my grandmother recognized that she was in need of care, the way she worded it. And then Kip came out later, and she was pretty much in the same shape as my mother. And the following night, they were going to sleep on a little ledge near Moose Lake. And it got unseasonably cold, and they went back inside. But that was the first time. And they actually saw some things in the sky and that sort of thing to go along with it. But the two of them had a very similar experience at the same night in Maine in 1954.
I'm going to ask you a very deep question, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but Okay. Do you have any knowledge of your mother ever being pregnant and losing the child?
I don't know of that, no. It's come up before, and she says no.
She says no. Mm-hmm. And anything that you maybe have seen? Usually, sometimes if this happens, I'm not saying this has happened to your mother, but where they look pregnant for a couple months and then whoop, nothing. Did you ever see that as a kid? Did you ever?
No, I don't think so. No, I do think that this is genetically driven. I do think that there was something of need from her or something exchanged, perhaps. I do believe that there's something to that aspect of it. Yeah.
Well, some have had it, and I'm just curious because they always seem to, for some reason, I mean, you know, both parties of sexes, the male and the female, are both taken, but they definitely use the female for their purposes, and so I just was curious if something like that ever happened to your mom.
We did find it a little interesting that my mother and Kip were both 15 and 16, and...
Yeah.
And they both ended up having children shortly afterwards.
Yes.
And so maybe there was something of interest with that.
Now, we got about 45 seconds left, and we'll come back after the break and talk more about this. But your first encounter, when was your first encounter?
The fall of 1966.
And how old were you at the time?
I was six.
6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And... do you remember it?
I remember parts of it. I remember quite a bit of it, actually, quite vividly, as my brother did.
We'll come back and go into this in detail, okay. But was your mom involved in that time that you were taken?
Again, we think so, but she is not sure herself.
Okay.
I'll explain that when we get back.
Okay, we'll take a break and we'll be right back with my guest, Thomas Reed. Welcome to the other side. You are listening to UFO Encounters Live. My guest is Thomas Reed. And, of course, the Reed case is very strange because it entails, in my opinion, a mysterious death. And mysterious death, when it's surrounded around UFOs, usually, in my opinion, means murder. So we're going to talk about that. But first, Thomas, I want to go back to the time when you were taken in the station wagon. And I want to go up to speed a little bit because I want to get to your father. And the time in the station wagon, tell me about that.
I used to ride horses, and I was leaving a Butternut Basin resort in Great Barrington, Mass. And I had the saddle came loose, and I was awarded with a brown ribbon, so I was pretty upset about it. So my mother decided to have a friend take the horses back. Well, she took us, my brother and us out for a bite and took a little bit of a different route home. And we had stopped at a bite and we're heading back. And so it was a little bit later than normal. I'm going to guess it was around maybe 8, 8:30. And I was in the back seat handing a fireball to my younger brother, Matthew. And my grandmother turned around in the passenger seat and looked out the back of the car, kind of general, you know, at us and out the window at the same time, and happened to see what looked like some lights behind a tree line. There was a hill to our left side, and the right side of the passenger side of the car was kind of flat and open, like a field.
Yeah.
And on the left, there was a line of trees, and above that, there was like a lot of lights in there. Almost reminiscent of maybe a helicopter, if it was in there with floodlights kind of thing, and it caught her eye. And so she watched it as we drove down the road a little bit, and the next thing I remember, and this is just my recall, the car kind of just went kind of silent. I don't remember hearing the engine or anything. I do remember the stones kind of being picked up by the tires and hitting the tank of the gas tank and the fender walls, kind of like a chipping sound of stones, and we just kind of coasted off to the right side of the road, and it was very still. There wasn't you didn't feel anything. It was reminiscent of a barometric change in pressure. I've been in the middle of a hurricane, and that's the closest thing that I can reference to how it felt to me.
Okay,
and it was just very. Just different. It was just an odd vibe, like a nothing, actually. And it was, basically, that's what it felt like. No breeze, no sound, no anything, just a nothing. And then, bang, there was this eruption of crickets and katydids, and it just over. It was louder than anything I could remember, but it went from being completely silent to this eruption of crickets and katydids. And the next thing, I'm in a very big... room that was very dark. There was, I remember, some type of a table or a counter of something to my right. And to give you an idea where I was standing, it would be if this was a football field, I would be maybe at the 5-yard line. I was almost in a corner, the right side corner of this room.
Okay.
And I could see a little bit. I don't know where light was coming from, but for the most part, it was very dark. It seemed very maybe humid, or hot, a little hot. And there was a door straight ahead of me that I didn't realize was a door at first. I don't know how long I was there. I'm guessing maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And there was a light that was very like an egg light type of thing.
Yeah.
And this figure kind of stepped inward maybe 5 or 6 feet. And I'm going to guess a little bit taller than it was, somewhat human looking. It was probably about maybe 70, 80 feet away from me. It was a big room.
Okay.
And I started to walk up to it, and in the earlier times, there was almost like a controlling type of way that I would be engaged in things. I didn't really have a choice. I would just kind of go along with it as if I was
controlled.
You know, you know, no control over myself at all. This I had control over. I chose to walk up.
Okay.
I'm not sure why, but I did. And I was harshly grabbed very, very tightly on my just above my left elbow, and I was not. It was almost like I wasn't meant to be a willing participant type of thing. This was more harsh, more militant, orchestrated, and almost seemed time-sensitive. I was grabbed by my arm. This whole thing took just a matter of seconds. By the time I got to this figure, I was rushed out this door. I took a right down this hallway. It was a very tall, these walls were extremely high, and I went to a T that was about maybe 30 or 40 feet down. I took a quick left, and it was a T. It wasn't rounded. It was a left. And I went down maybe 10 or 15 feet, and I was taken into a room off to the right of that hallway. And at that point, there was a room contoured inward, almost like a can would. And it had a pocket on the left side, a pocket on the right, and the back of the room was pretty much squared off. But this rounded piece came almost maybe a third of the way into this room. And on the left-hand side of that, there were some figures that we found to be very disturbing, which looked somewhat like an ant is the best way to give people a quick image of that. And then to the far back right wall, there were two or three that looked more human, but not human. And
some more
to sit on this table.
Were they clothed, Thomas?
Yeah, they were. Like, they were white. They were wearing like a white.
Like a doctor's?
I'm sorry?
Like a doctor's coat?
No, more like something skin tight.
Oh, okay. And they're white. Okay.
And it was like a white or an off-white. And this table that I was to sit on was very low. I was actually just able to scoot myself up. Now, I was 9 years old, so it couldn't have been very high, maybe 2.5, 3 feet, not even 3 feet off the ground. And I sat on that, and I was facing this wall that was contoured inward. And I was, at that point, I wasn't thinking I was going to be laying down or anything, I guess. I sat there, and I was staying there. I mean, things were happening around me. These two figures that looked kind of like an insect, if you will. There was two of them very close together, and they were maybe a foot away from this, what I would reference as a wall. And they were absorbed in that, what they were doing on that wall. There wasn't much movement. It was just basically staring at this section, and I don't know what it was they were looking at, but at this wall. And so I was looking at the side of them. And then the three over to the side, started, one went to the back of me, and the next thing I know, this insect thing turned its head, and for the very first time I actually saw it, and I jumped off this stool or table, whatever I was on, and I darted out to the right side of this area that had this pocket, if you will, to the right side of this room, and I went running into I guess it was a hallway. It was a huge intersecting hallway, and I can't express enough. This thing was huge. I stopped about 5 feet into this thing. You could have driven. The hallways were on the left. Okay, it was like a Y, and I came in on it off center. The bottom part of the Y, let's say, was about three times fatter than the other two areas that went out. The one on the left, you could have driven. It was like a four-lane highway. The one straight ahead was much more narrow. Maybe you could fit two cars through it. The one on the right that I really didn't get a good image of because it was kind of off my right shoulder, I'm assuming was about the same as the one in front. But what was interesting about this, too, was that this area that I was in was probably as round as a basketball court. And it did have some markings on the ground. It did look like it had some marks, gray marks or something, nothing that I really remember distinctively, but there's something there. But I do remember that when you came out of this Y area, it bowed outward. So when you had the hall coming into this area, it bowed out almost as if it was planning to accommodate a lot of traffic. Mm. You know, if you were going to the right or left, right, it would give you some extra room.
Now, did they chase you? Did they chase you, Thomas, when you took off?
I stood there for a moment, and the next thing I know, there was a figure that came up from behind me, and I was just walked back into the room. And at that point, I had no idea. I think at that point, I thought I was getting away. I thought I was going to be able to like an instinctive type of thing, you know, just run.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go anywhere, you know. I just was lost. I did hear some voices. I did hear some crying out. I'd like to think it was my mother or family or someone that I knew, but I did hear some voices down that far hallway off to the right. But no, I was taken back in. And at that point, I was actually placed on the on this silvery white type of thing, and a peace came over me that I remember looking very similar to maybe the top of an MRI machine or something along those lines. It had holes in it. It looked like it was a combination of pieces. It looked very had a lot of areas in it that were probably the size of maybe a dinner plate.
Now, were you on this table? Did they strip you, or did you have your clothes?
No, I had no, my pants were off. I don't remember. I saw my feet. I remember seeing my feet. This thing did not cover me that tightly, as I thought it was going to keep me from running.
Mm.
And I looked down, and I could see my feet, and I could see underneath it, and there were these holes that they had. There were hands that came through, and there was what looked like a raisin. I've mentioned that, like a big raisin, and on a pad of some sort. And there was one placed on my leg. There was one placed on my stomach. There was one on my face. And I felt some taps to the head. I don't know what that was. There was actually a figure behind me at this point. And then that was basically it. I remember I came to, or what have you, back in this same room that I had entered.
Yeah.
And my mother remembers her part of it. My grandmother remembered a little bit of it. My brother remembers some of it. And so we get back in the car, and my grandmother actually was probably 3-4 car lengths ahead of our station wagon, walking kind of, just kind of standing there, really, not really going anywhere, not kind of in a weird funk. My brother was still curled up in the fetal position, kind of his head was on my right leg. My mother, oddly enough, was in the passenger seat now.
Hmm. So they didn't put you back the way they took you?
They didn't put my mother back in the right spot. I'm assuming maybe my grandmother got out, but then again, if she did, she would have been in the driver's seat. So
sure,
they reversed my mother and grandmother. And the other thing was, according to my mother, the car was faced in the opposite direction.
Hmm.
Now, it could have just been that she was confused. It could have been because of what happened.
Yeah.
But when my grandmother got out, she started walking to a store that my mother is sure we passed.
Hmm.
And
how about your clothes of your brother, your mother, or your grandma? Were they wearing the clothes the right side? Were there anything changed? It looked like they got ruffled up?
You know, I don't think we really looked for that.
Did you ever notice when you take back to that memory, do you ever remember whatever your mom was wearing, like, hey, she was, that's different, or it's inside out, or any kind of anything like that? Or maybe even with your brother, if he's sitting next to you, you know, is his pants tweaked, or is his shirt goofy, or?
I don't think we looked for that. I think that, I think more than anything, when this happened, my mother was almost in kind of a, she sold the farm after this. I mean, this really did it for her. And,
yeah.
And my brother was out when we came back. You know, I just think that because of what happened, we were just so...
And your dad wasn't with you, correct?
No, we weren't married yet. My stepfather.
Oh, your stepfather,
although
okay.
He legally adopted us. No, they weren't together yet, although they had been seeing each other, but he was in Long Island.
Interesting. We're going to take a break.
What I can tell you is that my grandmother walked ahead.
Why don't you save this, and we're going to come back after this break.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
LifeChange Tea detoxifies. GetTheTea.com. It's only about $1 a day. GetTheTea.com. Receive more energy. GetTheTea.com. Lose weight. GetTheTea.com. It's purifying. GetTheTea.com. It works immediately. GetTheTea.com. It's too easy. GetTheTea.com. We challenge you. GetTheTea.com. What's the phone number? 928-308-0408. What did you say? 928-308-0408. I didn't get that. 928-308-0408. Will it work? Yes. GetTheTea.com. Unmatched. GetTheTea.com. This gets in your head. GetTheTea.com. That's the idea!
Welcome back to the last segment of UFO Encounters Live, and again, my guest is Thomas Reed. Thomas, you know, sorry to interrupt you on that last segment, but you were just being returned to the station wagon. Things were not quite the same, and your grandma was acting kind of funny, so I want to give the mic back to you and let you take it from there.
My grandmother, I think, was obviously affected the most from that night. She, for whatever reason, had gotten out of the car. I'm assuming she was in it. When I came to, I was the second one to actually see her right over the driver's seat and into the street. She started to walk aimlessly, kind of not like really directional, like she had a purpose to go somewhere. She just kind of walked up the street and crossed the road and went into a store that sold strollers and bikes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she walked up the steps and right by the cashier and kept walking, just as if, you know, she couldn't go any further. And she ended up getting caught behind some bicycles. And so I came in after her, and I was, Nana. I used to call her Nana. Let's go, we got to go. And I was very frightened. I no one else was responding. I was 9 years old. Grandmother's the only one, at the time, appeared conscientious. And wasn't responding to me either, and so I started to, really try to reach out to her, and she ended up continuing to go through these strollers and bikes, and she ended up putting her hands on one and stared at it, and it got really in tune with it, I guess, or just stared at it and started pushing it back and forth as if there was a child in it, and she did that for quite. I'm gonna guess a good minute, maybe. It was a while, and so I finally was able to get her hand, but of course I couldn't pull her where I was because I was on the other side of these strollers and
sure.
What have you. And so she finally started to look up at me and come out of it a little bit and just called her, and she came back around, and we exited the store and started to go down the steps, and she started to almost like shake and start to cry and start to lose it at that point, like she was coming into herself now. And
so something very traumatizing took place.
Something very traumatized. She broke down, and she's always worded what she saw off to the left of the car as looking like a floating strip mall. It was that big. So my family, we very quiet, just drove home. I can't remember anyone saying anything after that. My mother was in the driver's seat, and we came out of the store, whatever kind of store it was. We got back, and she sold 35 acres to a dentist by the name of Richard Stevens. And then the 40 acres went with the house, 40 acres plus. And then she sold her restaurant, and we moved. And that was the end of it for Sheffield for us. We never went back, really, except to drive through it.
We have just a few seconds left. Question, have you been back?
Yes, I did. I went back with my paralegal who is actually, through the law firm that she represents, is taking a lot of our information before a circuit court judge to be authenticated.
Okay.
To have a memorandum of law ruled on it. And we went to the house that we grew up in. The owners have actually moved it from the street up to the top of the hill. And oddly enough, he has two children. They're girls. And the person that we bought the house from had two children that were girls. And I find that a little odd that there were two girls, two boys, now two girls. And the crazy thing is that the two girls that he has are named after the two, or not intentionally, but have the same names of the girls who owned the house, that lived in the house when we bought it.
Oh, very strange.
Quite interesting.
Very strange.
And the address of the home is my mother's account in Maine. She was 15 in 1954, and now the house has been has the address of 1554. So there's some really strange things.
Very strange.
And a lot of people talking out about it now, and
yeah,
from Sheffield since the alien mysteries and since the article in the paper. So,
well, I want to talk about this further. I also want to talk about your father. So what we're going to do is bring you back for a second round. So I appreciate you being a guest on UFO Encounters Live, especially the first one coming back. Thomas, thank you so much, and we'll have you back.
Thank you very much, Ronnie. I really appreciate you calling me on this one.
I thank Thomas for being on the show, and of course, next week, Steve Pierce is my guest. You might recognize him as one of the writers with Travis Walton, Fire in the Sky. So until then, be aware of your surroundings, and good night.
You've been listening to Roddy McMullen, your watchman of the night skies, on UFO Encounters Live. If you'd like to visit us during the week, log on to www.ufoencounterslive.com and make contact.